to defend his ego or to prove his strength. He is fighting to save future generations. In the same way, we should fight with our partner not out of ego, but because we want to protect and build a beautiful future. In the Bhagavad Gita, the enemy, and ultimately the loser, is not a person, but an ideology. It is darkness, ego, greed, and arrogance. In our relationship conflicts, the same is true. The loser shouldn't be one of us. It should be the flawed ideology or issue and the negativity it provokes between us. What if we approached a fight as a team? The specter of disagreement builds like a wave in the ocean. As it approaches, it grows taller and more daunting. But instead of turning away from the wave to pretend you don't see it, the two of you face it as it looms over you. Can you keep your heads above water, or will it crash on top of you? The key is understanding that your partner is not the wave. The wave is the issue about which you disagree. If the two of you approach it together, kicking in the same direction, encouraging each other, you can swim through it side by side with a sense of shared victory. This reframing has changed my life, and it can change yours. When my wife and I see ourselves as a team fighting against the problem, we crush the problem. The desire to win comes from ego, and we want to control our egos. Why would I want to crush my wife? Why do I want to defeat the person I've chosen to spend my life with? My wife is not my opponent. I love her. I don't want her to lose. I don't want to lose either. Every time one of you loses, you both lose. Every time the problem loses, you both win. Try this. Shift an argument to a shared goal. Instead of looking at it like you're taking sides against one another, frame the conversation as if it's the two of you together taking on the problem. If we come to the table as adversaries, we increase the likelihood we'll fight. So instead, come to the table as a team who take on the problem together. Here are some examples of how to shift an argument to a shared goal. In the next section, I'll explain how you can plan ahead to make your fights as productive as possible. Let's say the argument is, you don't clean up after yourself. Maybe you can reframe that to, we should set a routine for daily chores. Maybe the argument is, you're always late. You could try, can we sit down and talk about how we want to spend our time in the evenings and on weekends? The argument could be, you don't mind spending money on your interests, but complain when I spend money on mine. The reframe or shared goal could be, let's set a reasonable monthly budget. A potential argument could be, you don't give the children as much attention as they need from you. A new shared goal could be, let's discuss what we think the children need, maybe with them depending on their ages, and how we can support that. Love to fight and fight to love. Fighting, done well, benefits relationships. Long-term relationships don't survive because of great date nights or spectacular holidays. They don't endure because people have good friends, although community certainly contributes to relationship stability. One of the biggest factors in a long-lasting relationship is knowing how to fight. According to a paper published by the Society for Personality and Social Psychology, when partners can express anger to each other in healthy ways, they build certain qualities and abilities. The qualities, such as compassion, empathy, and patience, help you understand the challenge. The abilities, like communication, listening, and understanding, help you solve equal or greater challenges in the future. While expressing anger has value, I must add that there is a difference between conflict and abuse. Abuse is stressful, but it is not the positive kind of stress that makes us stronger. Physical abuse, threats, force, control, and manipulation are not love. Nothing productive or positive comes from diminishing another person. If your partner is physically hurting you in any way, that is not acceptable. Beyond that, there are areas where you may have trouble drawing the distinction between conflict and abuse. I hope what I'm about to share is helpful, but if you're in an abusive relationship or aren't sure, I urge you to seek professional help. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. How to know whether you're experiencing conflict or abuse. Let's start with money. If you're experiencing conflict, your partner argues with you about your spending habits. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner tells you how to spend your money. When it comes to family, if you're experiencing conflict, your partner criticizes or complains about your family member. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner ridicules, humiliates, or alienates your family member. When it comes to kids, if you're experiencing conflict, your partner argues over what's right for the kids. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner threatens you or the kids or uses you or the kids as a threat. When it comes to quality time, if you're experiencing conflict, your partner complains that you don't spend enough quality time together. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner feels ownership over your time and controls whether you spend time with anyone else. When it comes to chores, if you're experiencing conflict, your partner doesn't think you do enough to help. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner tells you what to do. When it comes to jealousy, if you're experiencing conflict, your partner feels upset about where your attention is going. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner accuses you of lying without cause. When it comes to the little things, if you're experiencing conflict, your partner experiences small frustrations that grow over time. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner can be set off by anything with an out-of-proportion reaction. When it comes to respect, if you're experiencing conflict, your partner uses words to elevate their own importance. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner uses words to diminish your importance. When it comes to sex, if you're experiencing conflict, your partner complains about the frequency or style of your sex life. If you're experiencing abuse, your partner pressures or forces you to have sex or participate in sexual acts when you're not comfortable or sure. The root of the argument. How we approach an argument, big or small, sets the tone for its resolution or lack thereof. In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna approaches the battle with humility. He wants to do what's good and right, to serve and improve life for future generations. Meanwhile, his enemy, Duryodhan, comes from a place of greed, arrogance, and thirst for power. He declines wisdom and insight from Krishna. The results of the battle reflect the warrior's intentions. Arjun is victorious, and Duryodhan, who had only selfish drives, loses everything. There are three kinds of arguments, and these are shaped by three energies of being described by the Bhagavad Gita. I introduced them in Think Like a Monk and mentioned them briefly in Rule 2. ignorance, tamas, passion and impulsivity, rajas, and goodness, sattva. I use these energies as a way of examining what state of mind we bring to any moment, and they can help us understand the energy we bring to any conflict. Pointless arguments. A pointless argument arises in the energy of ignorance. It's a thoughtless outburst. You literally don't know what the point is. You have no intention to understand each other or find a solution. Pointless arguments occur in the wrong time and place. They don't resolve anything. We're just lashing out. At best, we recognize them as silly and let them go quickly. At worst, other resentments creep in and they escalate into outright anger. Power arguments. Power arguments emerge in the energy of passion. We just want to win for the sake of winning. That is the point of the argument, more than addressing the actual issue at hand. We're focused on our side of the story and try to trap our opponent in their mistakes. We may put on a show of listening to the other side, but we really just want to hear that we're right and get an apology. In the Bhagavad Gita, this is the energy that Duryodhan brings to the war. Ego drives this fight, and our position is, I am right. My way is the only way. Because we're focused on power, the changes we insist on have to do with convincing the person we're arguing against, not resolving the issue. Productive arguments. In productive arguments, which take place in the energy of goodness, we see the conflict as a hurdle we want to overcome together, and we're open to recognizing each other's side of the story. We want to understand. We know why we're having the argument, and we see resolving it as a healthy step in our relationship. This is the energy that Arjun has in the Bhagavad Gita. The most important tools in productive arguments are reason, intention, perspective, and love. These aren't techniques, they are spiritual tools. They have to be practiced with the heart and mind aligned. If you go through the motions but aren't working from your heart, you won't make progress. In productive arguments, we mutually agree on ways we're both going to change our behavior going forward. Both partners are happy with the resolution. How to have productive arguments. We would all rather have productive arguments than pointless or power arguments, but doing so takes practice. Part of the reason pointless and power arguments are so common is that they're easier to fall into than productive arguments. People are often told to take a breath and count to 10 when they're angry, but we're never told exactly how we should make use of that breath. In the Bhagavad Gita, we see Arjun pause and ask for Krishna's wisdom in the middle of a conflict. Think about that. He stops in the middle of a battlefield to talk to God. If Arjun can manage to shift his attention away from the battle in this very tense moment, the most difficult of conflicts, then we too can learn to pause and bring awareness to the daily skirmishes and the all-out wars we confront in our relationships. In order for a couple to win together, you must be acting out of love and the desire to be a team with your partner. Remember, if you're operating out of fear and ignorance, there's no goal. If you're operating out of passion, then your ego is leading the argument. We begin to change the energy we bring to arguments when we purify the ego. Purify the ego. We can't team up to fight the issue unless we take our egos out of the equation. We know it's a power argument when we enter it with mistaken, ego-driven convictions, like, I want to win, I am right, my way is the only way. Thinking you're right doesn't solve anything. Yet we want our partner to lose unequivocally, declare us the victor, and submit to our demands. If you come to an argument convinced that you are right and your partner is wrong, your tone and your words will make that inflexibility obvious to your partner. You must accept that there is some truth in what your partner is going to share, and be open to hearing from them. Your conviction that you are right usually doesn't change your partner's mind. Instead, it tells your partner that you don't care how they feel or what they think. The only outcome you'll accept is for your partner to change themselves and/or their opinion. It's natural to approach an argument wanting to convince your partner that you are right. Being right validates us. It gives us someone else to blame. It makes us feel secure in our beliefs and assumptions. We don't need to change or take any responsibility. In competitions, the ultimate power environment, it's true that someone loses and someone wins. The winner gets to be right or better. In politics, the winning candidate's policy dominates. In war, the victors dictate the peace terms. But in a relationship, being right won't solve the issue. Your ego might feel good for a while, but it won't stop the problem from coming up again, and your relationship won't benefit from the resolution. Ego makes you lose, even if you win. Instead, our goal is understanding. We want to connect. We aim not just to resolve our conflicts, but to use the resolutions to grow together. Again, in a relationship conflict, if I win and you lose, then we both lose. And if you win and I lose, then we both lose. The only successful argument is the one in which we both win. We have to not just acknowledge this, but deeply internalize it. I'm right, and you're right. You're wrong, and so am I. These are both win-win scenarios. Putting aside our ego to face and overcome obstacles with our partner purifies the ego. Purifying the ego is letting go of the desire to be the focus of attention. With purification, we start to display more understanding, empathy, compassion, trust, and love, and so does the other person. Try this. Identify your ego and passion in the conflict. Figure out if your conflict is pointless, ignorance, power-related, passion, or productive, goodness. 1. Write down why the issue is important to you. What made you angry? 2. Identify your reason for fighting. Am I fighting because I believe my way is best? Ego. Am I fighting because I think we should do something the right way? Ego. Am I fighting because I want the person to change? Passion. Am I fighting because this situation offends me to the core? Passion. Am I fighting because I want to feel different? Passion. Am I fighting because I want to improve the situation? Goodness. Am I fighting because I want us to become closer? Goodness. The first step in taking our ego and passion out of the conflict is to acknowledge it, but then realize that being right, being best, being offended, wanting reality to be different, none of these solve problems. To solve together, you have to focus on the intention to improve the situation and get yourselves to a more loving place. Easier said than done. To do this, you must rise to neutrality. The goal of taking your ego out of the equation is neutrality. When you stop indulging your ego, you become a better neutral observer of the conflict. Neutrality is the ability to separate the issue from your partner. You see that both of you have some role in the issue that has caused the conflict. You can see that you're both struggling. From this perspective, you can set a mutual team-based goal like, our intention should really be to get along better and be happier together. Do you agree? In the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, speaking from the battlefield, Arjun tells Krishna what he sees and feels. Arjun said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. Let me see those who have come here to fight. A subsequent verse reads, Arjun said, My dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. My whole body is trembling, my hair is standing on end, my bow, Gandiva, is slipping from my hand, and my skin is burning. I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune. Arjun expresses his anxiety and disorientation to Krishna. Krishna acknowledges his feelings, responding with compassion. His eyes full of tears. He asks, How have these impurities come upon you? You know the value of life. What is making you feel weak? Krishna is not judging Arjun or even instructing him at this point. He has the benefit of being a neutral observer and is first trying to understand him. We don't have the benefit of Krishna on our battlefields. A therapist has the neutrality to be an ideal moderator. But the reality is that most couples are navigating their issues on their own. Everyone wants the other person to be the one to back down and take responsibility. But if neither of you steps up, both of you might end up waiting indefinitely. To resolve a conflict, at least one of you will have to rise to neutrality so you can guide and shape the conversation with an even hand. You can start a neutral conversation with an apology if it's genuine. This means you've reflected on the situation and accepted your responsibility. If things are heated, your partner may respond to the apology by saying, You should be sorry. Taking responsibility means saying, Yes, I should be, and I am, and not getting defensive. If you can't apologize genuinely at the outset, save it for later. A neutral mediator does not race to solve the problem, but tries to learn about the combatants and begins to offer observations and insights. We don't have the perspective and wisdom of Krishna, or even a therapist, of course. So we must contend with our own state of mind while we try to mediate. If we are engaged in a pointless argument, we're upset, impatient, and don't truly listen. We take on the emotions of the other person, becoming angry if our partner is angry, depressed if our partner is depressed. This escalates the argument, increasing the levels of fear and insecurity for both parties. In a power argument, we can't mediate because we think our way is the only way. We're interested in immediate results rather than the process. Only in a productive argument can mediators focus on hearing each side tell their truth and remaining neutral as details and feelings are expressed. When we take a neutral role, we remind ourselves that the problem isn't our partner. It is something we don't understand about them and something they don't understand about us. Solving the puzzle will benefit both of us. If you're looking out for yourself and your partner equally, then you can be confident in your actions. If you don't rise to neutrality, the lack of resolution will rankle you both, and you'll return to this place again and again. Diagnose the core problem. Just because we're resolved to have productive arguments doesn't mean they will all start off that way. Sometimes we just explode, but when we do, instead of staying in the argument or letting go, if we diagnose what went wrong, we have a chance to better understand our partner and reduce the chances of having the same conflict again. Once you're practiced at arguing productively, you may be able to shift to this mode on the spot. But otherwise, you can both step away from the argument, examine your own role in the matter, and prepare to bring that to your partner. My client Dean had a fight with his girlfriend. They were at a wedding and she went to get them drinks. Dean watched as a guy at the bar obviously flirted with her. She smiled at him, said something while pointing over at Dean, then returned with the drinks. Dean was upset that she had enjoyed the attention she got from the guy. I told her if she was going to flirt like that and disrespect me, then we might as well end it. She said I was getting mad about nothing and was annoyed with me for ruining our night. When Dean and I discussed it further, it became clear that the real reason he felt threatened when someone gave his girlfriend attention was that he felt insecure about their relationship. This was the core of the problem. It wasn't what happened at the bar, but an issue that scene revealed about their relationship. With this knowledge, Dean was able to work on his insecurity rather than falsely accuse his girlfriend and cause more issues in their relationship. It's hard to diagnose the core issue on the spot. We always think we have a difference of opinion, or the other person did something wrong. Swami Krishnananda, one of the great teachers of the Vedas, explains that there are four types of conflict. Inspired by his model, I developed a similar but simpler way of peeling back the layers of an issue in a relationship. First, there are social conflicts. These are triggered by external factors that come into your zone and cause you to disagree. Then, there are interpersonal conflicts, where your complaint is with the other person. And finally, there are inner conflicts, where the root is an insecurity, expectation, disappointment, or other problem that lies within you. Let's see how these layers work. A couple is getting married. They can only invite a limited number of people, and each of their mothers has asked to reserve the last two available seats at the dinner for friends of hers. One groom wants to give the seats to his mother's friends, and the other groom wants to accommodate his own mother. Each argues on behalf of their parent, saying how important and close these friends are and why they deserve the seats at the reception. This is a social conflict brought about by both people wanting to fulfill their mother's expectations. Then the argument shifts. One person says their family has put more money into the wedding and therefore they should get to decide. The other person says they've worked much harder on the planning, so they should choose. The accusations and arguments now have nothing to do with the parents. This has become a power struggle between the couple, an interpersonal conflict. But then the couple takes a break. Tempers calm and they're ready to fight the issue instead of each other. When they return to the issue, they realize that neither of them wanted to let their mothers down. This was, for each of them, an inner conflict. The inner conflict is the one they truly needed to solve. At least one mother was going to be let down. They were arguing with each other instead of confronting their mothers. But then they asked themselves, "Do I often let my mother down, or is this a special circumstance? What is another way I could make my mother happy? I'm getting married. Is it time for me to stop catering to my mother?" Once they got to the root of the problem, they decided to invite two more of their own friends and toasted their mothers at the wedding. We can use these layers to look at the issue together, get to its core, and address the real problem. Our anger is often misplaced. We start arguing about the laundry when we're really upset about how our partner spends their time. We argue about how the children should do their homework when actually what upsets us is that our partner doesn't give us enough attention. We argue about how no one's helping around the house when really what we're upset about is not feeling understood or heard. The conflict won't go away until we identify and address its true source. We might get someone to fix a behavior. Dean's girlfriend can agree to never smile at another man again. But until they work through the real issue, his insecurity, it won't go away. Don't waste time arguing about something you don't care about. Instead, find the actual problem. Know your fight styles. Just as we have different love languages, we have different fight styles. Knowing how each of you process conflict makes it easier to get a handle on your arguments and helps you stay neutral. Radhi and I have completely different styles of arguing. I want to dive in and talk it out, whereas she wants to collect her thoughts and cool down a bit before we speak. I'm eager to find a resolution, while she wants to take a break, decompress, and think through the issue on her own before reconvening. Understanding this about each other stopped me from feeling hurt when she would go quiet during an argument, and it stopped her from being annoyed when I would want to discuss an issue at length. Identifying your partner's fight style and your own is the first step toward fighting for love. Try this. Identify your partner's fight style and your own. Which fight style best describes you? Venting: we have to find a solution right now. Hiding: I'm not ready to talk about this. Exploding: it's all your fault. 1. Venting. Some people, like me, want to express their anger and keep hashing it out until a solution is reached. To paraphrase a common saying, there are three sides to every argument: yours, mine, and the truth. There is no objective truth. The fighter who is solution-oriented wants to get to an answer and is often overly focused on facts. It's natural to want to solve the problem, but if this is you, you need to remember to slow down and to make room not just for facts, which are often up for debate, but for both sides of the story and for two sets of emotions, yours and your partner's. Watch out for unfiltered talking. In your eagerness to wrap things up, you might overwhelm your partner with too many ideas and approaches. Don't rush to an answer. First, you and your partner will need to agree about what issue you're up against. Only then can you look for solutions together. 2. Hiding. Some people shut down in an argument. The emotions are just too strong and you need space. You need to process. You either go silent in the middle of the argument or you leave the room and need to regroup before continuing. The person who withdraws doesn't want to contemplate solutions in the heat of the moment. they aren't ready to hear them and may grow more annoyed if their partner pushes for a quick resolution. Take the time and space you need, but don't use your silence as a way of doing battle. 3. Exploding. Some of us can't control our anger and so erupt with emotion. This response takes a great toll on relationships, and it's a behavior you should make a concerted effort to change. If you fall into this category, you must work on managing your emotions. This might involve bringing in outside resources to help you with anger management. Or you can make a plan with your partner during a time of peace, deciding that the next time you fight, you agree to take a time out. Figure out what would work best for you. Perhaps going for a run, taking a shower, or otherwise letting off steam. For a quiz revealing your own fight style, please visit www.fightstyles.com. Once you've identified your fight style, talk to your partner about it. What do they think their own fight style is? Based on your styles, create space for each of you to be angry and a schedule in which you can deal with it properly. If one or both of you likes to vent, the other might need more time and space to process. Just because one person isn't ready doesn't mean they don't love the other, and they should reassure their partner of this. Make sure you know each other's process before the next argument so that your different fight styles don't become the reason the fight escalates. Look to develop your self-expression, but make sure you allow yourself the time you need to decompress and think before trying to address the issue. If you both like to vent, this can work well if you make sure you're doing so in an intentional way with the goal of overcoming the issue together. If one partner needs to retreat, let them go. Withdrawal may feel like a punishment, but that doesn't mean that's the partner's intention. It doesn't mean they don't care. It's an emotional reaction. If you need to withdraw, say so. If one or both of you need space, plan to talk when you're both ready. Make good use of the extra time this gives you. Instead of allowing yourselves to get even more worked up, remember that you're on the same side and try to distill the issue to its core so that when you return to the conversation, you can articulate what you and your partner are up against. If your partner is explosive, encourage them during a peaceful time to work on their behavior. I'll share more on this shortly. The same is true if you're both explosive. This is a difficult behavior to change, but it isn't a productive way to argue. During an argument, you can simply say, "We're not going to come to a solution when either of us is this upset. Let's talk when we're ready." Winning together. When a conflict arises in your relationship, ideally you're able to stop in your tracks, find neutrality, diagnose it, and break down the importance and urgency of the issue. After all this prep work, you are ready to fight the issue together instead of fighting each other. These 5 steps can help you find peace. 1. Place and time. 2. Expression. 3. Anger management. 4. Commitment. 5. Evolution. Place and time. Pick a time and place for resolving your conflict. This may seem unrealistic. After all, fights spring up on impulse. But developing the ability to hold back when an issue arises will change your fights forever. Instead of saying, "How can you keep getting in the shower first when you know I have to be at work earlier?" say, "Hey, I'm feeling frustrated about our morning routine. Can we pick a good time to talk it through?" and schedule it. This skill takes time to master, In the beginning, you might have an outburst before you check yourself and remember to put some space between the emotions and the conversation about the issue that called them forth. That's okay. The outburst is your signal to stop yourself next time before you say something you regret. Conflict doesn't have to be distressing. It doesn't have to leave us with regret. How many times have we had to come back and say, "I didn't mean it"? When we feel mean, we say things we don't mean. We make permanent declarations based on a temporary emotion. Social work professor Noam Ostrander likes to ask couples, "What does the 5:30 fight look like on weekdays?" As Ostrander told Time magazine, they sort of smile because they know. One of the patterns that Ostrander frequently sees is couples arguing right after they get home from work. Everyone's had a long day, no one knows what's for dinner or has had time to decompress, and suddenly you're arguing over who forgot to pay a bill. Ostrander says the 5:30 fight can often be avoided with a new routine, a quick check-in, maybe a hug and a kiss, then a short separation so each person can transition from work mode. Then, when you've both caught your breath, you can come back together in a more open and relaxed mental and emotional space. The end of a long workday is usually not the best time for a serious talk. But if you can't put off an issue until an ideal time, another option is to bring timeouts into your fights. If you're in the middle of an argument and you're being reactive, ask for some time to think so that you can share your feelings properly. You can frame the timeout in a way that doesn't make your partner feel like you're walking away. Say, "Look, I'm fighting for the wrong thing right now. I'm sorry about this. I want to have this conversation, but I need 10 minutes. I'm not going anywhere. Let me take some time to understand this or cool down, and then let's have a proper discussion." You can also call for a focus on listening, where you both slow down and take turns speaking without judging each other or defending yourselves. You also may not want to ruin a relaxing weekend the two of you have planned. So explain to your partner that you want to talk about some of the things that you think are affecting the relationship. Tell them you want to do it soon, but when it's best for both of you. You want it to be a time when you're both calm, rather than while the kids are trashing the house or while your partner is trying to respond to a work email. Maybe on a weekend when work pressure is less, maybe after the kids are in bed. If you and your partner have a recurring issue, consider writing a letter so you have all your facts gathered and don't go off topic. You want to center the talk on what you really care about. You want to focus on what really makes an impact in both of your lives. Once you've arranged a time, figure out or create a safe space for communication. We use the expression, "Let's get it all out on the table." Imagine people just dumping all their baggage out onto a dinner table. Now that you've agreed to address the issue, take the time to set the table. Find a quiet space where you can talk. Don't have it out in the bedroom where you both sleep or at the table where you eat together. These are places where you spend intimate time together, and it's best to hold them sacred. Pick a neutral location where you can discuss things, like the living room or a public library, a space that is going to make you both feel more responsible, committed, focused, and calm, rather than a place that calls up other, more negative emotions. Outside, weather permitting, is usually the best choice. Go on a walk or sit in a nearby park. Try positioning yourself side by side rather than across from each other. According to cognitive scientist Art Markman, studies show that when we sit next to someone, we literally share their perspective of the world around us, which may help us to feel more empathy for them. In their book, Dimensions of Body Language, the Westside Toastmasters organization describes sitting next to one another as the cooperative position because it allows for good eye contact and the opportunity for mirroring, where we assume a similar posture or body movements as the other person. Just like repeating some of what the other person says back to them, physically mirroring helps people feel like you're hearing them, and ideally, you actually are hearing them. Sitting or walking next to someone helps mirroring happen naturally. Try this. Make an agreement for your next argument. It's easy to forget all our intentions in the heat of the moment. But if you have a plan that you've discussed and signed on to, you can fall back on it when emotions run high. Here are some points to have at the ready. In a calm moment, agree on these with your partner. Then, in your next spat, pause. Use that count of 10 to grab this agreement or to pull it up on your phone. Conflict agreement. We agree to pick a time and place for this conflict instead of having it right now. We agree that if we come to an agreement, we both win. But if one person wins, we both lose. Our intention is to pick as many as you like, find a compromise, / understand each other's feelings, / address this issue with a solution that will help us avoid this argument in the future, / support each other even though we disagree. A neutral description of the conflict that we agree on is, we're going to discuss it at this time, we're going to discuss it in this place. Before we resolve it, we will each write down what is upsetting the other person. Here are 4 possible solutions to the problem or ways we can avoid having this conflict again. You can then come up with 4 different solutions. Are we both satisfied with the resolution? Expression. Now that you've chosen a peaceful time and place, you should choose your words with similar care. Use specific language. Words can't be unsaid. Actions can't be undone. Share how you feel, not what you think of the other person. Author Ritu Gature says, 10% of conflict is due to difference of opinion. 90% is due to wrong tone of voice. Channel your inner guru and try to lead gently and calmly without forcing your ideas or desires on the other person. Don't use extreme words like always and never. Threats like, if you don't change this, I'm leaving you. Or attacking words like, this is your fault, you're wrong. These are terms of accusation and escalation. Too often our communication puts the other person on the defensive. We accuse, we don't inspire. Fights often start with the same 2 words. You always. This language is a sign that you haven't purified your ego. Make an accusation and bang. You've switched on someone's defensive current. You won't get what you want because of how you're asking for it. Instead, focus on clarity. Start by saying, I think our problem is that, or it's important to me that we think we need to establish what is right and wrong about our behavior, but answers don't come from certainty or exaggeration. They come from clarity. We each want to clarify that our partner loves us and that they want to be with us. Each of you should ask and answer the questions, what's our issue? What do you need from me right now? When you enter a discussion calmly, you can use language of request rather than complaint or accusation. Instead of asking, why don't you ever clean up after you eat? You can try, Do you mind cleaning up after you eat? Or, I'm not feeling great. I'm stressed about the way the house looks. Would you mind picking some stuff up? Most arguments are you, me. This is what you did to me. If all your language is oriented around yourself, you're creating a divide. Your partner will respond with defensive words like, I would never do that. I'm not like that. This is your problem. Before you go deep into your individual feelings, establish the intention that unites you. Then you can hear each other's feelings in light of that intention. You might say, we've been going through a rough patch, and it would be great for us to figure out how we want to handle our chores in the evening. When you start saying we, your partner realizes you're not being selfish. It's not just a problem you have with them. It's about both of you. You both have problems and flaws. Acknowledge that and talk about how to address them together. In practice, it can be hard to avoid I and you, but doing it saves you the far greater discomfort of dealing with someone you've put on the defensive. Here are some useful we statements. We need to work on this. We need to change. There are things we both need to learn. Can we both try this together? Once you've established your intention for the argument, you can start sharing your feelings. When you say, I think, it suggests that you hold a fixed stance, while I feel suggests that you're describing your emotional reaction, which can evolve. When you do this, I feel this way. When you leave the trash out, I feel like our household isn't your priority. When you criticize me, I feel unloved. Don't insult or be defensive. Try being direct and respectful rather than putting your loved one down for their failure to meet your need. You may object that you don't have time for roundabout approaches to your issues. You'd rather be direct. Well, if we don't have time to communicate properly, we'll need to make more time for more conflict. I don't recommend going straight to your partner and saying, oh my God, Jay says we totally do everything wrong. That too will put them on the defensive and will get me in trouble. Instead say, I'd love to talk to you about the way we argue. I know that this could change our relationship. Whenever it comes to communication, set a time and make requests instead of complaints. Try this, discussing complex issues. We can't resolve complex issues with simple agreements like, I promise to put my socks in the hamper from now on, and I'll remind you if you leave them on the floor. A big issue may not have a quick fix or easy win, and will require more reflection and work to solve. This begins with articulating the issue and thinking about it together. Here are some ways to get you started so you aren't tempted to smooth over the issue with an artificial resolution, but leave it open for further understanding and discussion. This is what I heard, and here's what I am going to try to do moving forward. This point really resonated with me, and it helps me see things differently now. Now I understand what you actually want. This is how I can respond realistically. I'm not fully sure what the solution is, but I care about you, and I would love for us to revisit this next week to discuss further. I am sorry it took me this long to understand. I can see how it affected you. Let's work on this together. I see how hard you are trying. I will be more patient and understanding. Acknowledge what you've learned about each other along the way. At the end of this conversation, you should not promise that you will never do something again. unless you are truly able to make that promise. Instead, commit to what you will try to do. Anger management. What if, despite your best efforts, your partner is caught up in anger and ego? They might even deny there's an issue. Well, then you've got to work extra hard if you care about the relationship. If your partner is resistant, try saying, "Look, I want to have this discussion with you because I believe that we can get to a better place together. I'm not doing this to be right. I'm not doing this for my ego. I'm not doing this to prove you're wrong. I'm not doing this to make you look or feel bad. I'm doing this because I really want us to be in a good place. Let's discuss what kind of relationship we want." When you explain to your partner what you're trying to do, it raises their awareness. They then have the opportunity to respond, "Okay, I agree with you." And if they can't agree, then at least you have a clearer sense of the relationship's challenges and potential, or lack thereof. Here are some of the attitudes you might confront if your partner isn't on the same page as you. When you're met with anger or ego, address it by understanding people act out of ego when they feel accused. You haven't successfully achieved neutrality, or they haven't processed it. They still feel like the problem you're bringing up is theirs alone. Schedule a time and return to language that shows you want to work together on this as a team. When you're met with dismissive or belittling behavior, consider this. Your partner doesn't understand or refuses to see how much this matters to you. Make sure you've diagnosed the core problem and then use we language when you say, "We're not understanding the real problem here. The real challenge here is the core issue." The core issue is something they can't dismiss. When you're met with globalizing/blaming, address it by understanding if your partner is globalizing an issue, applying one instance to the entirety of your interactions or blaming you, take responsibility and apologize. Then find neutrality in order to bring the dialogue back to the intention of the argument and what you want to achieve together. Say, "I understand where these feelings are coming from. Let's focus on one thing at a time." When you're met with shutting down, consider this. If your partner shuts down, this isn't the right time or space to resolve the issue. Make sure you know their fight style and then together set a time and place for the argument. When you're met with giving in or giving up without resolving, think about this. Sometimes a partner is so eager to end a conflict that they just agree to do whatever you want, but you don't feel confident that they'll stick to their commitment or that their heart is in it. In this case, use specific language. "This is what we're agreeing to. You're going to be home by 6 p.m. 5 days a week, and I'm not going to make weekend plans without checking with you. Can we both agree to this plan?" You can't resolve an argument by yourself. You both have to be on board. There has to be enthusiasm for the relationship and for keeping it alive. This enthusiasm may not be at the same level as it was in the very beginning, but it settles into an ongoing commitment to making an effort. If your partner refuses to talk about the issue or acknowledge there's a problem, you must decide if you can live with that. But I'll tell you this. If it's important, it's important. And if your partner's not willing to engage about it, look to Rule 7, where we discuss how to handle intolerable differences. Commitment. To resolve the issue, you'll need to reach an agreement. This agreement necessarily involves change. Otherwise, it's likely you'll have the same conflict again. This doesn't mean either partner should make promises like, I'll never do this again, or this is the last time, or this will never happen again. We are drawn to these dramatic statements. We want to hear them, and we like to say them, whether because we feel obliged to as a show of our commitment, or because such blanket statements are actually easier than the painstaking work of figuring out over time exactly how to adjust and improve the relationship. Conversation is much more likely to get you to a solution than blanket statements. Sometimes we need outside help to find a solution. Certain topics can be especially complex or challenging to take on by yourselves. If you have trouble reaching resolution on your own, enlist the help of an objective third party to help you work through the issue with your partner. Ideally, it's not a friend or family member. You want someone who is truly objective, such as a therapist or counselor, a mediator, or a trusted spiritual or religious counselor or advisor if they're available to you. It's healthy to get help, and it's worth it. Keep in mind